We're going to go on to case number 5, number 10-1100 and number 10-1101, Bubenis versus Holder. Come on up, Mr. Kanya, unless you want a moment to put things together over there.
No, I'm fine, thank you. Good morning, Your Honors. This immigration case involves the petitioner's applications for asylum and for withholding of removal from Lithuania, which are based on rather unusual and compelling circumstances. I'd like to first briefly review the several significant facts of the case, which are not in dispute.
But we've read the briefs, and you have so little time.
Oh, okay. Then I'll cut to the chase. It's relevant to consider that...
If you want to, you can.
I'd like to just quickly, it's only about a minute or two, I think. Okay, so in 2000, the petitioners arrived in the U.S. on tourist visas, which were illegally obtained. Prior to that, the petitioner's brother had sent $6,000 to an intermediary in Lithuania who paid certain money to a corrupted embassy employee at the U.S. Embassy in Lithuania. In approximately 2002, the scheme and the petitioner's involvement became known to federal law enforcement. An investigation was initiated. The petitioners became involved in that investigation. They agreed to cooperate in return for a lesser sentence. The intermediary in Lithuania became involved. He was made a subject of the investigation, and he was also formally charged in the indictment, along with numerous others and the Foreign Service employee. Now, it's not in dispute that very significant harm came to the Yonatin family. In approximately December 2003, the petitioner's brother began to receive threats from Darius Ryka in Lithuania. He felt himself to be involved in the scheme. He thought that he might be returned to Lithuania to face this person, and he committed suicide by hanging on January 4, 2004, at his home in Wheeling, Illinois. It was a petitioner that came across his body. That same month, a fire was set at the petitioner's mother's home in Lithuania, and the door to her apartment was basically burnt. And at the same time, the petitioner began to receive threats herself from Lithuania. On account of these events, in February 2004, the FBI helped the petitioner's mother and two children to enter the United States.
Let me stop you, Mr. Kenya, because we do have questions.
Okay, certainly.
And we've read it. We really have. We know those facts. We could tell you the facts.
Okay.
Are you claiming that any of the protected grounds of race, religion, nationality, membership in a particular social group or political opinion applies? Or is your argument entirely dependent on the state-created danger exception?
No, we're saying both would apply. The protected ground would be that of imputed political opinion.
What is the imputed political opinion?
Well, my main argument relates to due process, and the record was not sufficiently developed to allow that determination. The parties during the hearing were not provided notice that this was an issue. There was no opportunity to make a closing argument to address this issue or any other issue. And so the record is devoid.
It's your obligation to develop your theory of asylum, not the immigration judges.
Right.
And if that was your theory of asylum, then you had to put it in and have a basis for it, factually and legally.
Yeah. But it was put in. The application indicated political opinion and social groups.
So explain to us how this fits, that theory.
Granted, it would be the fringes of imputed political opinion. But, you know, political opinion depends on a particular country. Lithuania is a very small country by population and size. It's not known exactly what their politics is, what their history is, their culture.
In what sense is participation in immigration fraud a political opinion?
No, it's not so much the participation. It's the fact that this case was publicized in Lithuania. It relates to the perception of the citizens of Lithuania towards the petitioners. And that takes whatever direction it would.
I thought they were claiming that they would be persecuted by the co-defendants in the immigration fraud scheme for ratting them out in this country, basically.
That's right. But the point is, yes, that's the principal harm,
that's
perhaps.
That's the crux of the claim here. And we've already said that, you know, fear of persecution from a co-defendant is not cognizable on an asylum or withholding of removal claim because it's not a protected ground.
Well,
and I guess, you know, if you're trying to get yourself into imputed political opinion, you've got to come up with a theory for that, and I'm not hearing it.
Well, it's just that Lithuania being a very small country, having a certain type of population and attitude, and there are problems in the country. There's rampant corruption and organized crime, and we don't know what direction that would take in the media. This case was publicized in the Lithuanian media.
Where's Rijeka?
What?
Where is he?
He's in Lithuania.
Is he politically connected in any way?
Well, there was some testimony to that effect. I can't say specifically that it was.
Well, is he being protected or something by the government? Is there some way he's involved so he can make these threats with some backup from the government, some acquiescence or something?
Well, our contention is, for example, he was arrested in conjunction with the FBI investigation, and he was released.
Yeah.
And he was named in the indictment, but he was never brought to justice.
So is he being
So maybe that suggests, and I don't know, but
maybe
that suggests.
Are they trying to extradite
him? Not that I know of. I don't believe.
Okay, well, I'm just asking these questions. If you've got something, you've got to know it. Otherwise, we've got to figure something else out.
But the fact that he was named and not brought to a trial, not attempted to be extradited, that may say something about him being protected.
How do you distinguish this case from our decision in Wang versus Gonzalez?
Well, that case involved the country of China. That's a very large country. Somebody can easily relocate. That's not possible in Lithuania.
Yeah, but
getting to the protected ground, though. I have my train of thought. This case involves the U.S. Embassy located in Lithuania. There's just more of an opportunity for a political connection than there was for that case taking place in China.
The government, is there something that you're claiming about they should get special treatment because of the cooperation from the government? Is there something that puts them in a different category than someone else that's being sent home or back or whatever?
Not that I was really intending to make an argument on, but I mean, it could be considered to be a social group. I mean,
what about the fact that they were the grandmother and the children?
The mother.
That they were paroled out of there for their protection, I guess.
Yeah, because, you know, as was acknowledged by the court, there was very significant and real harm occurring to the family.
You haven't made any connection to that. Like, there's something that the government's admitted that there's a big problem here.
Well, I think it was an acknowledgement that they faced harm and had to be brought to safety in the United States. And now it seems really unfair to, now that they've given their testimony, just simply return them.
Just unfair.
Yeah, I mean, they're facing harm. I think that should rise to a category of asylum. I mean, asylum principles are based on humanitarian concerns, and it's not the best case to fit into a category, but if there's any doubt that could be given to them, it should be rendered in their favor.
During your rebuttal.
Okay. That's fine.
Truman. Good morning.
Good morning. May it please the court, Michael Truman on behalf of the government in this case. Your Honors, this court should deny the petition for review in this case because there's no compelling record evidence that the harm that petitioners fear in Lithuania is on account of a protected ground.
I'd like to ask you something because in Wang, you know, we noted that the government could have sought an S visa on behalf of an alien cooperating in a criminal investigation.
That's right, Your Honor.
Would that have been available here as well? Was it even considered in this case?
And during the trial hearing, petitioner's counsel mentioned that there had been some consideration, but I need to make clear that an S visa, they're actually very rare. There's very few of them to go around. And it's clear that the government has to initiate it. The government has to request petition the S visa, and there's no guarantee that it will be granted by the State Department. In this case, the relief that the petitioners got was what they called deferred action status, which means an alien that's eligible for removal can be put into removal proceedings, but in the department's discretion, they will defer starting removal proceedings because they're helping out the government. That's the status they got. They got that deferred action. So they actually had several years where they could have been in proceedings and gotten deported, but were allowed to remain here and get work authorization. That was the benefit that they received when they proceeded.
Late for the government to seek an S visa?
Well, I think it's pretty clear in this case that the government isn't interested in seeking an S visa, at least from the record of the case. The attorney,
not interested at all.
Well, from the record in the case, it's clear that they started removal proceedings. If they had wanted to, they could have done it before starting removal proceedings, perhaps, or the U.S. attorney could have attempted to do it before this came into the removal proceedings started, or when they were doing the plea negotiations, or at any point during the course of their criminal or immigration case. The plea agreement's clear, though, that there was no sort of quid pro quo that you're going to be able to stay here as permanent residents for helping us out. In fact, the petitioners themselves received a reduced sentence for helping out the government. So they received a benefit for entering into that plea agreement. There's no dispute that there is a potential for harm returning to Lithuania. Unfortunately, revenge from a co-conspirator is not a protected ground. As this court recognized in Wang, has already been mentioned, those circumstances are unfortunate, but there are only five categories of protected grounds under the Immigration and Nationality Act, and there's no compelling evidence in this case that would indicate that they are fit under one of these protected grounds.
If, in cooperating with the government, they had been motivated by a desire to weed out public corruption in the Lithuanian government, the alleged corruption, and to reduce their own criminal liability, could they then have claimed persecution based on political opinion in this case?
Well, there's no evidence of that in this case. In fact, there wasn't any indication that the Lithuanian government was corrupt with respect to these petitioners. It was actually a United States government official that was corrupt and was getting paid to give out these visas. Their co-defendant is not linked to the government. The immigration judge during the hearing tried to sort of pin down the petitioners and say, what is the link that you're alleging with the government? And they couldn't identify any individual or any government entity that this person, their co-defendant, was related to. There's simply no evidence, compelling or otherwise, that there's the government's tied into this potential harm that they say they fear when they return to Lithuania.
Is there some reason our government might want Rajka back here for other charges, or is that...
Well, the criminal, they entered their plea agreement in 2008, I believe. Or no, sorry, they entered their plea agreement in 2005, and then they were sentenced in 2008. So I don't know for what reason that they would bring them back here. I don't know if the criminal case has gone on against the State Department official or these other people that were charged in the indictment, but that's simply not. There's nothing in the record that would show that they would need to bring them back. And for those purposes, they could give them, again, some kind of parole like they did for the children or apply for an S visa.
But, of course, if they're sent back, so is the grandmother and so are the children.
That's correct, Your Honor. Again, as this court recognized in Wang, these are sympathetic circumstances. In Wang, we had a very similar case where a family member was harmed in the country. The petitioner had received direct threats, but this court held that did not constitute persecution on account of a protected ground. And we're talking about the immigration statute here, and there simply is no remedy beyond that, beyond those five grounds.
Now, who would have to ask for the S visa? You?
No, I believe I don't know what entity. I believe it would have been probably the U.S. attorneys that were doing the criminal case. The assistant U.S. attorneys that were doing the criminal case would have had to ask for it. And sometimes that occurs when the actual witness is outside the country and they want to get that person to come in for permanent residence. But as I said, I think there's 200 available per year in these kind of cases, and maybe 50 for terrorism cases. So there's not a lot to go around for everybody that's involved in a criminal prosecution.
Is there a quota?
What's that?
Is there a quota?
Yeah, there is. Congressionally established set quota for how many S visas they can give in a particular year, and they're very short duration.
So the local prosecutor would have to run that pretty high up the flagpole.
That's right. That's right. And in this case, just like the Wayne case, in spite of the sympathetic factor, they gave them work authorization for several years, brought family members here. They were able to benefit from being in this country, but they don't have protection under the Immigration and Nationality Act for that reason. I guess I'm going to address the state-created danger theory that was raised in this case. We would simply ask that this court, to the extent it reaches this decision, to follow the other circuit courts that have addressed the issue and held that there's no place for the state-created danger theory in immigration law. State-created danger essentially is where the government acts in a certain way as to put someone in danger. And here that hasn't occurred. The petitioner has voluntarily entered into this plea agreement to receive a reduced sentence in their case. And so it wasn't as if the government was doing something malicious or fraudulent or deceptive in bringing them into the plea agreement. They could have simply went to trial, risked serving jail time here, but they opted to enter into the plea agreement for their benefit. And, you know, obviously that has repercussions from their co-defendant, but that's not a reason, that's not a something that the state has done to put them in jeopardy of returning to their country. There are two other issues in this case, the denial of the motion to reopen and the denial of the continuance. Petitioner hasn't raised the argument, but if the court has any questions with respect to those, I'm happy to address it. Otherwise, I'll simply say that we believe the agency acted within its broad discretion denying the motion to motion to remand and also their request for continuance. Thank you.
Mr. Gagne, 2 minutes.
Your Honors, on the subject of the S visa, it is true that there's either 100 or 200 authorized by Congress, but only a handful are ever authorized in a given year. It's like one or two or less than half a dozen. So there are plenty of S visas to go along, to go around, if the FBI or the U.S. Attorney's Office was so inclined to assist these petitioners.
You're saying they don't?
They're just not used.
They don't use them
just, no, yes. And it's published, and I believe it's only a handful every year.
Have you requested that of the U.S. Attorney's Office?
I was not the attorney in the lower proceedings. I believe there were discussions, that's what the record indicates, with the appropriate officials. But for whatever reason, it didn't take place.
Is it too late to request?
No, I don't believe it would be too late at all, no. Regarding the issue of the denial of the continuance, we regard this as central to the case because it was not time to prepare within 30 days this complicated asylum application. And the previous attorney filed a motion for continuance 3 weeks before the hearing and the day before, and it was denied without any explanation. And because of the short scheduling of the merits hearing, the proceedings were really fatally flawed. I guess that's all I have.
All right. Well, thank you very much to both counsel, and the case will be taken under advisement.